Hello, Acceleration Nation. Welcome to another podcast. I have a career therapist on today. Her name is Jessica Sweet. I met her on LinkedIn. She has a unique background of not just being a career coach, but also a licensed clinical social worker. So she has deep understanding of the mindset, things that go on in your head, the limiting beliefs that might hold you back. So we dig deep here into imposter syndrome, into confidence. We talk a little bit about dealing with depression through the job search. So it's a really good episode to dig into if you're having some challenges of building confidence and moving forward. We also talk about how to select the right companies in your job search. I'll turn you over to that episode shortly, but before I do, let me just remind you of the three ways that we help you as an ambitious professional. One, if you are someone that likes to do it yourself, we have a digital course called the Job Acquisition Method with all the scripts, templates, worksheets that will empower you to get a better job. If you're someone who likes to do it with others and with a community and with some support, we have a group coaching program that works with you for 6 months to give you the confidence, insight, also working with our framework that will hold you accountable and make progress. And then if you're someone who wants to work with a personal coach and work with us until we can guarantee that you get a better job, we do offer personalized coaching. So check it all out at kademacareers.com. And the last three words I will leave for you before I turn this over to the Jessica Sweet podcast are own your career. Hello, Acceleration Nation, and welcome to another Sick Career Podcast, which is soon changing its name to the Own Your Career Podcast. Today, I'm very fortunate to have Jessica Sweet on our program. I met Jessica, like I meet pretty much everyone nowadays, on LinkedIn. I saw her posting some really interesting, thoughtful posts on LinkedIn, and we started DMing one another. What really attracted me to Jessica and her profile is her unique blend of having a social work degree and also being a career coach, or she calls herself the career therapist. So with that, I'm going to hand it over to Jessica. And Jessica, tell the Acceleration Nation crowd out here a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm really glad to be here. I'm a social worker. I practiced social work for 8 to 10 years before I switched into coaching. And I focused on mental health and substance abuse work. And I worked at a Harvard affiliated hospital here in the Boston area and got my training there. I had a specialty training in trauma treatment. And then when I had my first daughter, I moved into coaching and, you know, really liked the coaching model, but brought that background that I have into the work that I'm doing today. So yeah, that's me. I live in the Boston area. I have 2 girls, 15 and 12, and I live with my husband and 3 cats. So that's me.
I have 1 daughter who's 15, 2 sons that are 17, soon to be 18, 3 birds, which suck, and 2 dogs. So it sounds like we're in very similar spot dealing with teenage hormones and pets and helping support clients. So it's always great to talk about all those topics, but today we'll focus more on career-related activities. So I'd love to understand a little bit what brought you into becoming a career therapist. Mm-hmm. So going into social work, was that your intent initially to be like a career coach, a career therapist? And if not, like what led you to take this path?
I never in a million years would have thought I would be a coach or run my own business. And in fact, I've been doing it for 15 years. And when I started, coaching wasn't as popular as it is today. So when I would tell people I'm a coach, they would say, "What sport do you coach?" You know, and so they didn't really even understand. So no, it was not my intent at all. It just kind of blindsided me. But what happened is, like I said, I had my first daughter. Social worker salary is not great. So I looked at the cost of daycare. I looked at what I'd be bringing home. And I was like, that makes no sense. Let me figure out something where I can at least be at home while I'm trying to figure something out. The other side of that was I have a friend named Cheryl Richardson. She is a coach. She's written a bunch of books and she's been coaching forever. And you know, when I kind of looked at what she was doing, I was like, man, that is so awesome. That, you know, I was like really jealous of that. Actually, that was the feeling. And I was like, I need to listen to that. And so that's why I moved into coaching versus just opening a private therapy practice. It's like her work to me was really inspirational, and I really wanted to do something that felt like that.
Nice. I really appreciate your LinkedIn profile. You're someone that is focused on careers. I can tell when I come across someone's LinkedIn profile, if they put some effort and thought into it. You do a really good job, especially in your about section. And there's a couple of quotes there that I would like to dig into and have you expound upon, assuming you're okay with that.
Of course.
It's public out there. Anyone can find it.
Yeah.
This is talking about the person who is coming to your site. Mm-hmm. So if you long for more than just a title and a paycheck, you're in pursuit of a career that deeply resonates with your values and reignites your enthusiasm. So title and paycheck, I think people sometimes center focus on those, but you're trying to call out that there are other things that may drive fulfillment and value. Love you to expound upon this a little bit of what you mean and why it's not always about chasing the dollars and chasing the titles.
Yeah, absolutely. A couple pieces around that. Like, I think there's personality type that really needs to have that alignment between their values and the work that they're doing. And part of the values is making an impact with your career. But also part of it is just feeling like the work I do matters every day. And I feel like I'm in my zone of genius a lot of times, right? Like I'm using skills I want to be using that I'm good at, right? So there are several areas in which that alignment can occur. And what I found is there's both a personality type and I think a stage of life. So 40 plus, where people are like, oh, you know, I've achieved whatever it is I set out to. I'm making good money. I've got the title. And that's all still really important. And they want to keep that. It's not that you throw that out and like start a social work career, right? It's just that you figure out like, what is it that's really going to make you wake up in the morning and feel excited to go to work every day? And again, there are different areas in which people have to find that alignment, and it can be different for different people. But I really find that more and more that is true. And I really feel like that's what the Great Resignation was about. It was like, yeah, you're paying me. Yeah, I have a title, but this isn't really working for me. And so I've seen that for a long time, and it just kind of made a big bubble at that point, but it's still there.
So the titles part, I totally get. I have had crappy titles. I've had good titles. I've had titles that are inflated. I've had titles that are deflated. Titles don't pay the bills, don't pay for tuition. The paycheck, on the other hand, is a currency that works across any career stage, any life stage. So I tend to overly focus on the paycheck, and it's not all about the paycheck, but generally what I like to advise people is if you're going to do something, you can help be a career therapist, and you can be a career therapist to make a little bit of money, or you can be a career therapist to make a lot of money.
Yep.
So of the two, more is better than less, assuming that you have 15-year-old, 11-year-old daughters that might go to school one day and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. In addition to the titles and the paycheck, what other things do you find to be really valuable with the clients that you meet with? Like, I have a couple of things in my mind that I'm thinking of, but what else drive people's decisions in terms of following their career, if not the titles and the paycheck?
I think of career, and I think most people do, it's like your series of jobs, but also where you're trying to get. So like that path. And I think thinking about it from the end, right? So like, where do you want to end up? For a lot of people, it is around impact. So that doesn't necessarily mean, you know, you're working in a nonprofit or anything like that. It just means like, when I wake up in the morning, I know that I made a difference going to work. Yep. And you could be making widgets. It doesn't matter. As long as you believe that that widget is useful to somebody and you're excited about that, that impact is one real critical component. A lot of people feel like that they need to make that impact in the area of leadership. I had a woman tell me the other day, like she has a third grade teacher. She's in her 50s, but she still writes to her third grade teacher because she made such an impact in her life. So she sends her like holiday cards and that sort of thing. And she said, I want to be that for somebody. I want to make that kind of impact for somebody. So that's, I think, one area where the meaning really comes in. But it's also around, you know, being excited about completing a project or the mission of the organization or using the skills that you want to use, like tapping into your creativity or your problem solving, whatever that is. So those are some of the different areas.
when you're dealing with clients, when you're coaching clients, it's kind of hard to separate sometimes, but how much of it is you deploying your social work experience and like the mental game, like the mental perspective versus some job seeking tactical aspects, like if on 100% pie, like yeah. It's kind of hard to divvy it up, but how much do you think is mental versus like taking action and the right frameworks?
I mean, I would say it's probably 50-50 if I had to divide it, because like without the right tactics, you can have a great mindset and maybe it doesn't get you the result you're looking for, but right tactics all day long and a poor mindset, and again, you're not going to end up where you want to go. And things like, let's say, bad interview skills. I have bad interview skills. So part of that is, you know, practice and the STAR method and your strategy, right? Like that's a piece of it. But the other piece is, how comfortable do you feel selling yourself? Mm-hmm. How much confidence do you have? How much do you feel like you belong in that room to begin with, right? Like all of those things are mental aspects that are really going to influence any tactics that I give you on top of that. So it really is 50-50. And I think that that's really the value, is being able to bring that aspect in a credible way is like, I think really that's important to my clients.
What are some of those mental obstacles, or often called limiting beliefs, that mm-hmm. you hear from your clients? What are some of the most common ones that you hear? And then I would love to dig into a couple of them to see how you typically work with those clients to overcome these challenges.
Some of the biggies are confidence in general, lack of confidence. A kind of a subset of that is imposter syndrome, right? Like that's a confidence issue, but it's kind of a very specific type of confidence issue. I think those are probably the two biggest. Yeah. The other thing is, I guess I would say I have a lot of clients that have ADHD, and I have a lot of theories about why that's the case, but that can lead to a bunch of different things. It can lead to like actual issues with, you know, executive function and that sort of thing, but also confidence again, right?
So I'm someone that probably has ADHD. I know my dad has been diagnosed with it. My daughter has been diagnosed with it. I see a lot of similarities between me and my dad and my daughter. What are some of those symptoms that you see with clients, whether they present, they tell you that they have ADHD, or symptoms that they have that are most relevant to the job search and the career journey?
So I find that a lot of clients with ADHD have exceptional creativity and problem solving skills. So those are some of the pluses, but they have more difficulty around keeping themselves organized and starting tasks that they don't really want to do. And who in the world wants, like, oh yes, I get to job search today. That is so exciting, right? Nobody feels that way. And when you have ADHD, it's particularly hard to kind of get motivated to do the kind of stuff that you have to do. And if you've had struggles, particularly adults that haven't been diagnosed, I think, you know, you've had struggles all along in your life, certain things, and you feel like, oh, I'm just not good at that, right? And yeah, the case may be that like you aren't good at it, but there's a reason for it. And the reason that you kind of have in your head that you're not good at it is one thing. And then the real reason is a different thing, right? So people say, I'm lazy, I procrastinate, I'm like a terrible organizer, whatever. And those are all kind of value judgments, as opposed to, you know, I have more difficulty in these areas and let me find some workarounds. Like that reframe and figuring out like, okay, how can we make this actually happen, even though it's more difficult maybe? That's some of the work that I do.
The other biggie, in addition to ADHD, whether it's presented or symptoms, was confidence and imposter syndrome. And I think they're almost one and the same, or very highly correlated with one another. Talk a little bit about what imposter syndrome is and how you help your clients overcome some of those obstacles, those limiting beliefs that might prevent you from making forward progress.
Imposter syndrome is basically the feeling that despite evidence to the contrary, that you are not as good as people might think you are, right? Like that you're an imposter, you're a fraud, you don't belong, you know, all of those kinds of ideas. And I think that a ton of people have it. I think this statistic is in the 70th percentile, among, especially among high achieving individuals. The way that I work with people is really to kind of identify how it crops up for them, what happens, how they're currently coping. So there are a couple different ways to cope, or that people tend to cope with imposter syndrome. So like, I need to have everything perfect. And if I'm perfect, you know, then nobody can fault me or nobody will find out. I need to work harder than everybody. And if I work harder than everybody, then nobody's going to find out, you know, that I really don't know what I'm doing. So we look at like, what is your style? And then we look at how can you reframe what's happening? How do you have evidence that actually you can feel that you are not an imposter, right? Like, is there something that actually you can take in? And if you can't get to the point where you can take stuff in yet, looking at the external stuff. So, you know, I got all these great reviews on LinkedIn, or, you know, my boss said I did a good job, or I had a good performance review, all of those things. Can you look at that and suspend your own internal disbelief for a period of time and just operate as if you're not an imposter? And then what does that feel like? And how does that change your behavior? And then over time, you can begin to internalize it a little bit.
Yeah, I think almost everybody that I've encountered, especially high performers, if they're not some amount of imposter syndrome, they're probably suffering from a lot of narcissism. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's exactly the opposite of imposter syndrome, but I think outside of some folks that are fairly narcissistic, I think we all doubt our capabilities at some point and have lack mm-hmm. of confidence with our abilities despite our tremendous like accomplishments that maybe others see in us that we don't see in ourselves. So you work a lot with your clients on the mindset, imposter syndrome, confidence issues. Is there anything else there before we go into some of the career tactics that you take? Any other big ones there that we should cover? Like, we talked about ADHD, and that's like putting focus on the task at hand. Any other big ones on the mental side? And like, I don't want to separate these exactly because they are very intertwined. Mm-hmm. But before we get to some of the tactics that you take on helping people have effective job search, any other big ones?
Yeah, I think the other big one is the domain of burnout and work mm-hmm. trauma. So they're not the same thing, but I think they kind of go together a lot of times. So those are some things that I see a lot.
Yeah, especially now with return to work, work from home, hybrid. These companies are tossing us around like just mm-hmm. widgets, and some people are very amenable to it. It's tough. And not only does that flip-flopping hurt people, but the burnout, the bore out as well. I think Adam Grant talks about it. So how do you deal with those issues from like coming with your background from as a licensed clinical social worker, dealing with people with burnout or I guess maybe some difficult toxic situations? How do you get them over that hump to start making progress?
So just quickly, you mentioned bore out, and I just want to say, like, I think there are a lot of people that we were talking about the ways in which people might align with their careers that don't include the paycheck or the title. So, and I guess what I was trying to say is when you feel energized by your work, when you're not bored, right? Like that is a parameter. That's an important piece because people do want to solve problems. People do want to work. They just want to be excited about it. So that's the first part. In terms of dealing with burnout or toxic work situations, it gets very messy. Let me just start there. And I think the first thing for me is kind of an assessment, which is kind of an informal assessment that I just do in my head. Like it's not a paper and pen assessment, but I'm trying to understand, like, what is this person dealing with in terms of symptoms? So is there anything actually clinically going on? I've definitely had clients that come to me and say, I'm burned out. And they're at the point where they're really clinically depressed and, mm-hmm. and need a referral to a therapist and maybe a psychiatrist, and they need interventions around depression, right? And so I can help them get hooked up with treatment, and I can also help them with some of the interventions and supporting, you know, whatever their treatment team does, and then the job stuff. So that's the first thing is that assessment, like what's going on from a clinical perspective, what's going on that is contributing to the situation still. So, you know, are they still in the work situation? Do they still have that coworker, boss, whoever that's like contributing? So like really just trying to understand. And then looking at, you know, what are the things that we can do to improve it, right? So these things take time, which is the real hard part, is recovering from a depression, recovering from a burnout or a severe burnout. They can take time. It requires self-care, require probably a change in situation often, whether that's a new job or whether that's like having conversations at work that make something different. But that those are all the things that we need to navigate, the self-care piece and also what needs to change here, because you can't just take care of yourself and sit in that situation and expect to feel better. That's kind of what we do.
It's a lot easier said than done. I've been there at least three times in my life where I've been diagnosed with clinical depression. And when you're in the midst of that, at least from my experience, is you don't feel like doing anything and you feel like it's never going to end. And other people are telling you that, hey, there's ways to deal with this, therapy, drugs. Like I've been on Lexapro for a number of years off and on. It's hard to diagnose it when you're dealing with it. And then even when you're diagnosed with it, it's hard to see the light at the end of the tunnel. But it does get lighter, especially if you have the support of social worker, psychologist, therapist, and sometimes drugs as well, like legal drugs, pharmaceutical drugs.
Yeah, we have to say that.
Yeah. So then once you solve everybody's mind challenges, which I'm sure you do like that, it's simple. Then it's about getting over that obstacle and then making forward progress to land that job, to accelerate their career, to move forward. What are some of the tactics that you take there that you find to be most effective with your clients that are getting the results, and maybe some mistakes that you see people make along the way too that you often can course correct?
Yeah. So the first step for me and the way that I work with people in terms of job search is really understanding a person's brand, because for me, that helps them figure out who they really need to be networking with in terms of people and in terms of companies, right? If your brand does not align with a company, even a company that you're like, oh yeah, I'd love to work there, but your brand doesn't align, that is not going to be a real useful pursuit on your part. So we really try to find that alignment, find companies that people are excited about, but also make sure that the company could be excited about them in turn, right? And that's brand alignment. So that's the first step. And then amplifying your brand. So like your LinkedIn profile and all of that stuff as well. But being able to network, and that's really, a lot of people have so much trouble networking, and it has become this big, scary thing, but it doesn't need to be, especially when you have a strategy, when you know what you're trying to do and what you're trying to say, not, you know, I need a job, but let me learn about your company or whatever. So networking is the next thing. And then, you know, interviewing is kind of the next big milestone. Obviously, there's a lot of different pieces in there, but, you know, interviewing and being able to interview with companies where you already have an alignment, right? Like they already want to hire somebody like you, and not just for your job title, but who you are, what you do, what you stand for, the way you do what you do. You've got a leg up.
And a lot of your strategies make a lot of sense to me. They're very aligned with our growth framework that we use at Kadima. And the growth framework is like, it's an acronym because I like acronyms. G is clearly identify the goals and with the companies. And I want to go back into like how you help people find the right companies. R is like realistically assess their strengths and leverage those strengths. O is outreach, which is the networking, which you talk about there, which is the single biggest lever that will open the most doors for you. W is like work the system. So understand like how to prepare for those interviews, how those interviews work. T is train and tenacity. It's mindset, because you can interview amazingly. You can ace the interview and you may lose out to the CEO's son or to some internal candidate or someone else that just had something slightly different that you didn't have. And then the last part is H, high impact negotiation, trying to like help people negotiate for what they're worth. And I find from the mental perspective, people may ask too little until they get to the finish line. And once they get that offer, then they have leverage at their disposal because the company is saying that we want to hire you. I appreciate your strategy and makes a lot of sense to me. As you're working with people and trying to understand where they should focus on those companies, how do you either suggest to them? Are there lists that you use? Are there processes that you use to help your clients and people to identify those companies that they should focus on that are aligned with their values?
I think this is really the hardest part of job search right now, is trying to do that, because it feels easy for people. No, I mean, not easy, but easier to just say, okay, what job postings, you know, are out there for, you know, sales director, let's say, and then just go and apply to all those. And it's so much harder to network, feels on the surface. It's not harder because in the end you have better outcomes, but feels harder to network and to identify who should I be networking with, right? What companies do I really align at? So it is a research process, and it starts with understanding what you're looking for, right? Like the goals that you were talking about. So, you know, what are the values you want your company to stand for? What kind of person do they hire in this particular role, right? So like, what are your goals? Who are you looking for? And then when you start networking, it's a wider net. So you're talking to people and saying, hey, I'm looking for a sales director role where there's a real focus on, you know, development and training of the people under me. Let's just say I'm making this up. And, you know, they have X, Y, and Z. You know, do you know companies like that? That's one way to do it. It's just talking to a bunch of people, looking on the internet, right? Like, it's hard, but that's a way. And then this is a tip that I've found is actually really helpful as a starting point for that online research and even the in-person research is AI. So like ChatGPT, right? Like you just type in, I'm looking for a sales director role in the Houston, you know, Texas area, and I want companies that focus on blah, 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 whatever that is. And can you create a list? And then can you give me more companies? And can you give me more companies? And can you give, you can create a really long list and then just go and vet those companies. And some of them you will have heard of and some of them will be brand new to you. And you'll have to understand that you got to go deeper. You got to go a layer deeper and really get to like, is this what it says it is? And there are several layers, right? But that's a way to start and understand. Then I do have lists like B Corps and, you know, there are firms of endearment. There are different companies that have been recognized as great places to work, but great, again, is relative to what you're looking for. So,
yeah. So that's some sick advice to use ChatGPT. I've done that as well, where you type in, I'm looking to make a large impact. I'm looking for this location. I'm looking for companies that are hiring. I'm looking for a company that treats people well, blah, 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 whatever is important to you. Mm-hmm. And it's not a perfect list, but no, it's a starting point, and then it gets you moving forward. So you mentioned B Corps, which I'm a big fan of B Corps, benefit corporations, kind of like Ben & Jerry's and Method Hand Soap. We're going to be looking to do that with Kadima Careers once we have enough money and legal resources to move over to a B Corp. But the other thing you mentioned, like terms, like firms of endearment or something you mentioned, can you, yeah, like, is that a list or something? Or
it's a list. And I might be getting mixed up because it's been a long time ago that I looked at this and put that list together, but there's also something called Game Changers 500. So I might be kind of conflating the two. And there was a book written by some famous folks who I can't remember right now, who basically did an experiment. I think it was the S&P 500. And then let's create this list of companies that are basically run in a, for, you know, people first kind of way, or like a socially conscious way. And let's look at their earnings and their growth over time. And let's see who does better, right? And so they, this race, and obviously, well, not obviously, actually, but not surprising to me and probably to you, that the firms of endearment, the great firms that were run in a people first way, really outperformed the other firms and made a whole case that running a business like that doesn't just make sense from a people perspective, but from a financial perspective as well. So like looking at those actual companies, but also looking at like, what are the practices of those companies and where else do you see them? So again, I might be mixing up the two, but I think that's the book is Firms of Endearment, and you can look that up.
Yeah. I just Googled that while we were talking, and it looks like it's how world-class companies profit from passion and purpose. They're on the second edition. I'll check that out. It looks good.
Yeah.
And yep. Like from my experience of working for a lot of companies, I can tell you that the companies, like I've worked at Google and Facebook, and they've been Salesforce, they invest a lot in the employees and supporting the employees. And not only does that probably get good return long term in terms of retention and output, but it also attracts a lot more talent because people are saying good things of like, hey, you want to work at American Express, where I worked also? You want to work at these companies? So you get a lot more referrals. And this is why these companies get 3 million. I think Google gets like 3 million applicants a year, 3 to 7 million applicants a year, something crazy like that. Like not just because of what they do, but also how they treat their employees. And no company is perfect, but there are some companies that skew towards the better end of treating people how they should be treated, in my opinion.
Yeah, you become an employer of choice when you treat people like that. And so, you know, people are like, oh, yeah, I definitely want to work at Google, Facebook, wherever, right? And, you know, obviously some people don't. But the reason, as you're saying, they're drawn in is because of those practices. So, yeah.
So, Jessica, we're running a little short on time here, and I have three more questions for you. So, First one, what topic have we not discussed here that you would like to talk further about? We have a little bit of time to go into that. If there's something specific that you want to talk about that you think is really critical to people accelerating their career, owning their career, and moving forward, anything in particular that you think that we should dig into here?
Yeah, I'll keep it super brief, but I think the idea of work trauma is a huge one. You know, some of the stats on workplace bullying and that sort of thing are astounding. And I think just in terms of accelerating your career, if you're listening to this, and if right now or at some point in the future, you're experiencing something at work that's traumatic, please do not underestimate the impact of that. And don't feel like you have to like stand for that, right? Like you can do something, including leaving that organization. Like that is not something that should be happening at work, full stop.
I agree. And I think the fact that you say leave the organization, I think that's actually probably the most sage advice, because I've been in some of those situations in my past where I've either experienced it or seen it. And occasionally I've raised the issue and it wound up turning out very poorly for me, where I probably would have been a hell of a lot better of just leaving and then helping bring people along, because sometimes it's hard to change that. If that toxicity, if that issue is occurring, it's being either supported or at least condoned by leadership up top. So it's going to be hard to make that change. So I think that's a good thing. And also to separate it from you and understand that this is just a situation that can happen and does happen in lots of work environments, and try to get out of that situation as quickly as possible. Ideally not quitting either. Like I try to recommend to people, don't quit, have something lined up first. As long as you can manage it, and worst comes to worst, just kind of check out. And if they fire you, they fire you, because you're going to quit anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love the part that you say about bringing people along after you've left, because I've worked with several people who have stayed in these kinds of situations because they, you know, like that survivor skill. They don't want to be the one that got out while everybody else has left. But if you do get out and you have the opportunity to bring people along, that can really help you feel better about moving on.
And then last two questions. What is one final piece of sick career advice that you'd like to leave our listeners with, Jessica?
Let's say this is sick. I don't know. I you do hear it a lot, but I just need to underscore that networking isn't scary, right? It's just not scary. And you said it's like one, it's the single biggest lever you can pull in your career. And it's not just for job searching, right? Like people get ahead by meeting other people in their organization, by being visible in their organization. They can't promote you if they don't see you, if they don't know your work, right? By getting to know people in your industry, it's something that needs to be a lifelong practice for your career. So I would say that's big advice. You do hear it, but it's so important.
Preaching to the choir here. I'm a big fan of it. Even if you're an introvert, there are ways to do this effectively. One-on-one conversations could be better. You don't need to be going to a big conference necessarily. Mm-hmm. There are other ways that you can have conversations, but if you don't start talking to people and you don't start building those relationships, it's going to be hard for you to expand those opportunities. My case alone, 24 out of my 29 jobs came because someone was kind enough to say, hey, you should speak to Alan. Didn't mean that I didn't need an interview after, but 24 out of those 29 came because someone put in a good word on my behalf. So great advice there. And that's how we met. And my life is richer because of us finding each other in that sea of 1 billion people on LinkedIn.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, I'm glad to.
And last question I have for you, Jessica, is how can people find you, get in touch with you, support you? If people want to find Jessica Sweet, where can they find you?
Yeah, so I'm at wishingwellcoach.com. And then you can also find me on LinkedIn. My kind of handle is Jessica Sweet Coach. So you can find me either place. I hang out on LinkedIn a ton. So that's a great place to message me.
I see you post every day. I appreciate your posts. I chime in with it, and you post some good stuff that really helps to inform and encourage. So thank you for all the work that you do, Jessica.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, Jessica. And with that, we will wrap this up. And thank you so much for taking the time to share your advice, your insights, your guidance, and helping people to own their career.
Thank you.
That wraps up another remarkable episode of the Sick Career Podcast with Alan Stein. Check out past episodes and other resources on the website. That's sickpodcast.com, and it's S-Y-C-K. Alan, tell the audience about the newsletter they can sign up for.
The newsletter rocks. Check out the Accelerator, X-L-R-8-R. You will get great tips about your career. You will get honest insights. You will get the occasional pet picture. And you will learn how to take proactive control and take charge of your career.
Very good. Very good. That's sickpodcast.com, S-Y-C-K. For your host, Alan Stein, I'm Russ Reba. And we hope you've enjoyed today's episode. You are going to love the next one.